Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the latest Fireside Chat that EdUInc is presenting, and this one is on teen vaping. Lovely controversial issue for us to get our teeth into. I'd really like to welcome Dr. Alicia Porter, who's made the time to come and talk to us tonight, which we really appreciate. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the invitation, and I'm not sure that I'd want to be anywhere else except here tonight.
Just to give you a little bit of background on Dr. Porter, currently a child and adolescent psychiatrist, currently in private practice in the ADNOVA Center for Child and Family Development. She's also an honorary lecturer at Wits Department of Psychiatry. Dr. Porter completed her undergrad training at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and her specialist training at the College of Medicine South Africa in 2010. She further holds a diploma in human rights, mental health, and law, which she attained from India. Currently the secretary of the board of directors of the South African Society of Psychiatrists and a board member of Epilepsy SA. Her special interests include child and adolescent mental health, women's mental health in the workplace, and burnout. She is a strong advocate and voice for mental health and believes in its promotion and primary prevention. So again, a warm welcome to you. Thank you for bringing all this expertise to our chat tonight. And I thought, you know, a really good departure point for tonight's chat is a story I heard, I'm sure some of you have heard. It was a Russian MMA fighter who went to a zoo and videoed herself taking a drag of a vape and then offering the vape to an orangutan. And you see the orangutan actually exhaling the vapor. Of course, the world went mad. You know, her fans went crazy talking about how this was abuse. They wanted action taken. They wanted her title stripped. They wanted her banned from competing. And I thought to myself, I think there's something wrong with this picture. The world's gone crazy about this orangutan being given a vape, and yet our teenagers are being given vapes on a regular basis, and words like abuse are not being thrown around. What is your take on that?
I mean, if anything, I think it's been normalized and it's been sort of marketed as acceptable. And I think because it's got like fancy flavors, very exciting colors, so it really, I think, has been very much normalized, and it's just the way it is, and it's the better of the two evils, and it's not so harmful, and so it's actually quite the in thing. And if we want to be woke, then, you know, we've got to get on with the vape nation. And I think that really does speak to the problem, in that there's an outcry when an orangutan takes a vape, but there's silence when our kids are vaping on a daily basis. And it really has become, like, you know, we were chatting earlier, it has become an epidemic.
It's important to make that distinction. As you were saying, it's become normalized and people are saying, but no, this is the healthy alternative. And I think that distinction has to be made between vaping as an alternative for adults who have previously smoked cigarettes, teenagers who have never smoked anything and are starting to vape. Those are two completely different conversations. Would you agree with that?
I think if we were just to look at vaping as it, you know, as it stands, you know, there's this idea that vaping is the lesser of the evils. But with the vape, you know, because it's popular doesn't mean that it's safer, because it's, you know, what should be done. But if we look at what's contained within a vape, yes, you've got the nicotine, which is maybe to a lesser concentration than in cigarettes, but it's not just about the nicotine. There's probably about 20 other chemicals that they use within the vape, which is also then problematic because these chemicals are quite harmful. Also, the fact that the vape does cross, it gets into the bloodstream, it crosses the lung barrier, so it gets into your lungs, it gets into your bloodstream. Also, we are then using these harmful chemicals and the nicotine in children on a developing brain. And also the aerosol doesn't mean that it's okay, because it's not just vapor. There's also harmful stuff contained in there. So I'm not so sure that it is as a safer alternative or that it's less harmful, because it's got less nicotine. It's about all the other things that are contained within the vape.
I'd like to come back to that point on the nicotine in a moment, because I've read quite a lot that says there's significantly more in certain vapes. Mm. But before we come back to that, I was actually reading something earlier today on the Johns Hopkins site, and they said, you know, a therapeutic mist that goes over your lungs would be like a nebulizer. If you haven't been well, if you're putting it in your child's bedroom or something like that. But that's not the case with a vape. They're saying that the mix of flavor and the additives, the aromatic additives, the nicotine, this is, and all these other bits and pieces, they're all dissolved in an oily liquid. And as you're saying, it's the aerosolization of that oily liquid that gets really deep into the lungs. And that's where people are unsure of where the real damage is going. And it feels like cigarettes in that sense, that we're only going to have significant researched scientific evidence on this a couple of decades from now. But then people might be dying from it, like cigarettes. You know, historically we looked at cigarettes, suddenly lung cancer has become an issue. How do we know this is not going to be the track we're going down with vapes?
But I think that is the track that we are going down with vapes. And the difficulty is that with cigarettes, there's regulations, you know, on cigarette boxes. They say cigarettes cause cancer. You can't, you know, they won't sell cigarettes to under 18s. That is not so with vapes. Most vape shops are near campuses. Yeah. And there's no laws that regulate the age or... So it's unregulated. But in my mind, I'm not so sure that that the harmful effects are as much, if not more, than tobacco. Because already the literature, the research is starting to actually show the damaging effects, particularly on the lungs. And as I say, it's not just the nicotine. It's those other chemicals that are problematic as well.
Speaking of that nicotine, and correct me if you've read different literature, I remember watching, it was a Netflix show, The Big Vape. And on The Big Vape, they spoke a lot about the company Juul, which is now no longer in business. But they were a major vape manufacturer right at the beginning of this journey. And they went crazy on the advertising. You know, they were handing these things out at parties to teenagers and to early 20-year-olds. They really went big on getting people hooked. And when it didn't go quite as planned initially, they reformulated the little capsules that you would put into the vape, that one little capsule was the equivalent of a pack of cigarettes. Mm. That bore out a few weeks ago. Sahisa did a forum meeting on vaping, and we were very fortunate. We got Professor Richard von Sale-Smith from UCT to talk. He spoke to us, and he's the prof who's done the big study, the South African study. And he was also saying that these companies have gone as far as to change the chemical makeup of nicotine specifically to make it more addictive, as if our kids needed more nicotine, but that's what they've done.
Yes.
With the specific intention of hooking them.
Yes, and because it's not regulated, they're not answering to anything, because it's just a vape and it's so much safer. So they're not being subjected to the same rigorous rules, even around advertising. I mean, we don't previously, when I was young, I remember on TV you had cigarette adverts. You don't have those anymore because it's regulated. Whereas with vaping, you know, you go onto social media, on TikTok, the influencers, it really is just rampant. And I don't think that we are appreciating the dangers involved, and the fact that we don't know, because from one vape to another, you don't know how much of one you're getting and another. And the problem with nicotine is that it is very addictive, but it's very problematic for the developing brain. The brain develops by the age of 25, and so adding nicotine to that development is problematic, because it does impact in terms of impulse control, attention and concentration, and even things like mood and anxiety. It affects all of these processes, but it also primes the brain for addiction. And so there's the thought that, you know, it's a way to stop or a way to prevent. It's actually a gateway to much bigger problems with addiction later on in life, because you're now priming this developing brain, which is very problematic and has long-term consequences that are, that far exceed, you know, what's currently happening.
I've heard that a few times now, and I've read that a few times now, that, you know, the words you use, they're the long-lasting changes. When they speak about specifically the teenage brain and the fact that that prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until mid-20s, and they speak about exactly what you said, the learning issues, the memory issues, the attention problems, impulse control issues, anxiety, aggression, all of these things. When you say long-lasting changes in brain development, are these permanent changes?
They are permanent changes, because it's kind of like you having, you know, when your brain is developing, you're laying down neural pathways. But you add the nicotine and the pathway is not the same. It's glitchy. And so that's what's being laid down. So it's like this rerouting of your neural pathway. And that's permanent, because it's being laid down. So that's the track that you're laying, and it's not the same because you've got the added effect of this nicotine. And oftentimes, you know, kids and parents, I mean, I don't think we appreciate the actual effects of that, but if you took a brain that hasn't been exposed to nicotine and you took a brain that has been exposed to nicotine, and you do like a PET scan or one of these isotope scans, there is a stark difference. And you can see the brain that's been exposed and the brain that hasn't been. The colors are different on the brain. You know, they light up differently.
That's terrifying. Can't get out of my mind the amount of times I've seen posts on places like I Love Four Ways, where you've got a parent coming onto the post saying, my child's under so much pressure from his friends, he's 14, so I've just bought him a vape. And I feel like if we are not educating sufficiently about what you've just said, about the permanent impact on a brain, that parent has just given the child an addiction issue for the rest of their lives.
Yes.
I mean, is that what we're saying?
Yes, because it's not going to start in adulthood. Or most adult problems start average age of 14 anyway. So our adult problems don't start in adulthood. They actually started during adolescence. And so it's so important what we do during adolescence, because it has long-term consequences. So, you know, even just in terms of, as I say, your attention, concentration, learning, impulsivity, the addictive nature, you're setting yourself or putting this kid at risk for mental health issues, physical health issues later on in life. And also, you know, I sometimes get quite dramatic and say, you know, ultimately they become less functional, failure to launch, we're going to contribute because it's going to actually impact our GDP. And so this is not just a child problem. It's a country problem.
It's a societal issue.
It's a societal issue, because you're going to have non-functioning adults. And it doesn't just start in adulthood. And sometimes people only get help in adulthood. But if you go all the way back, it started when the tracks were being laid.
Sure.
Back to the story in terms of, you know, my child is under pressure, so I gave them a vape. You know, my question would be, maybe we need to actually address the pressure, because children or people who vape are more anxious. They are more subject to anxiety, depression, and even with kids, like suicidality. And so an anxious kid, so it's it goes in both directions, because anxious, you know, kids where there is underlying anxiety, depression, are then more likely to vape as a coping mechanism. And so for me, it's about, yes, there's the vape, but I think it's a symptom of a much bigger problem that we currently facing, particularly with teenagers.
And it feels like a bit of a spiral, this bi-directional. It feels like a bit of a spiral to me, because if we keep hearing this, oh, my child vapes because they're anxious, but vaping will cause anxiety as well. So we're in a very negative spiral.
Yes. Yes. And we're also contributing to the brain development being glitchy.
Sure, sure. Going back to that study that I mentioned, Professor Van Zylsmit did at UCT, it was so refreshing to hear the stats that we were getting out of that, because, you know, as South Africans, we get the European stats and we get the American stats and the British stats, but we very seldom get stats about what's happening in South Africa. And I found it fascinating to see how his results are correlating pretty much with the rest of the world. Mm. You know, they did the study was 25,000 learners across 52 fee-paying schools, public schools. Mm. He mentioned that there was no real link between the affluence of the demographic, which I found quite interesting, because perhaps because of our environment, we tend to assume that our kids have easier access because they have, you know, the financial wherewithal is easier for them, which doesn't seem to be playing out in the research. Mm. He was talking about 17% of those kids admitting to using vapes on a daily basis. And I thought, well, 17% admitting is not probably the most accurate number.
It's not a true reflection, but it's still a scary...
But it's terrifying. Yeah. I did the math on that. That's 4,250 children across 52 schools.
Who admitted
to using a vape.
Usually we have to add about another 25, 30% onto that.
Exactly.
That when it comes to...
So that was significant right there. Then he said of that percentage, 38%, they said they vaped every single day, which then in my mind is indicating a dependency on the vape. They asked very interesting questions like how long between waking up and vaping. And almost 50% of them were saying within the first hour. And again, that's speaking to addiction, isn't it? That you can't really get going with your day unless you started taking the nicotine in. So many of them not able to get through a school day. Mm. They can't sit for 6 or 7 hours without their nicotine. And then 88% said that they used nicotine vapes as opposed to non-nicotine vapes. But is there really a big distinction between the nicotine and the non-nicotine vapes?
They make the distinction between nicotine and non-nicotine, but the point for me is that neither of them is safer, because the non-nicotine vapes have all of these, you know, the flavorants and all of that have these chemicals that are as problematic, if not more so than, you know, than the nicotine. But reading through Prof. Van Zyl's stats, for me as a mental health professional, it actually speaks to the problem with regards to mental health that we have with particularly teenagers. There's been a significant increase. And I wonder, beyond the addiction, whether that's not speaking to the increased levels of anxiety, the increased levels of depression, and even substance usage. And so it is an alarming statistic, but I think it speaks to a much bigger issue than just
the vaping. Let's get into that now, because this is really your forte. This is what you're doing all the time, working with these children where addiction is already a factor in their lives. And the fact of the matter is, teenagers, you know, ads about smoking were there when most smokers were young, or when all smokers were young. They probably saw pictures of lungs, you know, the black lungs of the smoker. All the scary tactics were there, and yet they smoked cigarettes anyway. We are going to have all these conversations about vaping and everything else, and yet teenagers are going to try it anyway. We know that the nicotine is extremely addictive, so there's going to be a significant amount of that. How do you handle the situation? Again, it feels quite bi-directional. You're saying that they get hooked on the nicotine, therefore there's addiction. There's anxiety, so they look for channels of getting rid of the anxiety, but the channels that they are seeking out are resulting in more anxiety and more issues with substance abuse and everything else. So how are you managing the situation? There's definitely been an increase in what we're dealing with, particularly since COVID. How do you typically tackle this situation when parents come in with an addicted teen?
So, I mean, I think it's quite different with the vaping in the sense that, you know, with cigarettes, everybody knew it was wrong. And so parents were, it's wrong and you shouldn't do it and all the rest of it. And even though we knew that, that people knew that you shouldn't do it, you did it anyway. But it came from a point of, we knew that it was not okay. Whereas with vaping, I feel like it's more of a problem by the fact that we're normalizing something that could be very harmful. And so it adds an additional layer, because it's not just having to raise awareness and educate around the harmfulness of vaping, because it's perceived as harmless. So that makes it even more problematic. But I also think it's about then speaking to what is underlying, what is this a symptom of, and how do we then begin to give coping skills? Because for me, vaping is a maladaptive coping skill. You are needing to cope. So we need to be thinking around alternatives in terms of how do we teach kids coping skills? How do we teach parents coping skills? Because I really think there's an interplay. And the difficulty is that parents are struggling at the moment. They're struggling, and I think the reality is we are in uncharted territory. The rules have changed significantly. We don't have a playbook anymore. We can't call anybody. I can't call my mother and ask her about parenting in the digital age, because she's had no experience in that. So we are in this uncharted territory, and now we are having to make up the rules as we go. But vaping arrived, the digital space arrived, and we've been left wanting. And so in that kind of anxiety about it, I think we've become quite permissive, like we were chatting earlier. There's a permissiveness, because there's this idea, FOMO is a real thing, even with parenting, I fear that my kid, I don't want them to miss out. And, so there's this encouraging of peer pressure where previously we'd maybe speak directly to it or recognize it. Everybody wants, nobody wants to be left out, but we're not really thinking about, the actual thing that we are promoting. But what is underlying is more important. Do we need to address the anxiety? And the difficulty, particularly with, adolescents, is that anxiety looks so different. It looks like behavior. It looks like outbursts and tantrums and, not wanting to go to school and tummy aches and headaches, So it looks so different. So it can easily be missed. And so let's give him a vape.
In that forum discussion, I think most of us nearly fell off our chairs when, after the prophet finished speaking and presenting his data, a few heads were on a panel and they were speaking about the challenges. How do we juggle the code of conduct side of things within a school with the pastoral care that is part of what has to come with the vaping? Because, as you say, it's symptomatic of something. And one of the heads said, well, he was at a complete loss when a child was caught with a vaping on campus, and he was brought into the office. The parents were brought in, and the parents' response was, but the psychologist recommended it. And at that point in the meeting, there was just a prolonged silence, because what do any of us do at that point? As you say, we're making up this playbook as we go along, hoping for the best. But as a good friend always says, hope is not a strategy.
No, it isn't.
Where do we find this balance? How do we balance the non-permissiveness, as you said, that came with smoking? You knew. If your parents smelt that cigarette on you, you were in deep trouble.
Now your parents are taking you to the vape shop to go
and saying, would you like bubble gum or candy
vanilla.
Crush? So we are in a very difficult predicament in that space. Maybe I should stop for questions at this point before we carry on with any other discussion. I'm sure there must be some questions.
What have we learned from cigarettes? Cigarettes came out and nobody was against it. There were a lot of health practitioners that signed off saying cigarettes weren't harmful, and then turned out they were lying, and then it actually is. And we've gone through that whole experience, and we've got programs to wean somebody off of smoking. So those programs exist, and they've been developing for many years now, and there must be some success with it. How much of that are we doing for vaping? Is it just because we don't know whether it's reasonable to wean them off, because we don't know whether it's unsafe or unsafe? Is that the reason why we're not implementing those programs at a more massive scale in the same way that we do with cigarettes? So what have we learned from cigarettes? Or is that just one anomaly that we can't draw enough data from to change what we're doing today? Or can we actually do that, and to what extent are we doing that?
So I think that we can learn lots of lessons from cigarettes, but I think that the vaping came very subtly, and it was dressed in very bright colors, and it looked like it was the safer alternative. So it really came quite disguised, whereas with cigarettes there was, you know, at the beginning this open debate about it, and they had to, you know, kind of prove or not. Whereas this came in as a wolf in sheep's clothing, really. But I think actually we should be going that way, where we should be looking around policy in terms of, so we need actual policy around vaping like we have with cigarettes. We need to be looking at, even in a school environment, our processes and protocols, and again, policy in that way. But we should be creating awareness with parents, because that's the difference. You know, back then our parents were not encouraging us to smoke, or condoning smoking, or saying it's okay. Whereas here, you know, it's the campaigns and the marketing around vaping is very Gen X and very sassy, and you know, it's TikTok and the influencers, and so they basically have taken the marketing to the market, who are the teens, who actually are not at a place that they can distinguish. But then they've also hooked the parents in that it's the lesser of the evil. So actually, if my kid vapes, that's okay. But I really think we can actually take a lesson from the cigarette playbook and enforce it, where there should be big stickers that says this can cause, or no vaping for, and you know, we need to be going in that way. But it kind of came with the boom, and I think COVID didn't help either, because I think it was very smart, even the way the marketing arrived, and the fact that it's unregulated is very problematic.
If I think back to what happened from a societal point of view during COVID, you know, families were then isolated within their homes for prolonged periods of time. And for example, in the education industry, essentially we invited parents into classrooms with the online teaching. And to some extent, they haven't really left again. And that's come with its own set of issues. Maybe in this kind of thing as well, because the parents were almost given the task of making the home the safest place. Protect you from the pandemic. You stay at home. This is the safest place. And that was reinforced over a period of time. And I wonder how it's led to things like, you know, if we go back to the I Love Four Ways example, where a parent's actually saying they're going to give their child the vape. When you read commentary, you keep seeing comments like, well, as long as the child's doing it under the roof of your home, you know that they are safe.
Still crossing the lung barrier, it's still going into the
precisely
bloodstream.
So for the same reason I'm saying some parents didn't get back out of the classroom, we still have these parents in this, oh, but I can keep them safe. As long as I am witnessing it and I am seeing it, I am still in control of the situation. They're not thinking about exactly what you've been saying.
Even speaking to that, then I, again, you know, when I see a child, I have to consider the parents. I have to consider the family system. I can't look just in isolation. So that may speak to a bigger problem even within a family system, where you have an anxious child, overwhelmed parent, and so the quick fix would be the vape would be acceptable. So, you know, it's about also kind of stopping to think about what's happening in this system, you know, that vaping becomes our coping.
Do you think then that the bulk of the cautionary tales, the policy, these sort of things, should we be aiming that then more at the parents or the teens?
I think it should be both, but I do think that we've got work to do with the adults in terms of parents, schools, you know, caregivers, because there is this myth that it's not harmful, that it's okay, which it's not.
No, it's most certainly not.
And because it's socially acceptable doesn't mean it's safe, doesn't equal safety.
You know, I struggle to wrap my head around how intentional the vape companies have been when they looked at this teenage market and they thought there are billions and billions of dollars to be made. And how do we know? Because of the manner in which they've been designed. They have designed these things to look like highlighters. They've designed them so that the child can hold it in their hand in a classroom. They've put all these fabulous flavors on them. No adult's interested in bubblegum anything. But of course teenagers are.
Yes.
Fabulous cherry candy, this, that, the next thing. They were so intentional about it. And then interestingly, since the company Juul collapsed, most of the vape companies have been bought out by big tobacco companies who have lost sales in cigarettes. They've bought the vape companies so that they can now recoup that loss.
The shops are mainly near campuses, near schools. There's policy around, you can't just sell cigarettes anywhere. You can't sell it to anybody. But here we've got 14-year-olds being transported because they can't even drive. They've been transported to the vape shops to go and pick out, you know, the color, the flavor. And that appeals to the adolescent brain, you know. And so it's been very clever, the way the marketing has been. And they came under the radar. And as I say, because they unregulated, it's very problematic. And remember, with the adolescent brain, it responds to colors and flavors and, you know. So it's poison wrapped in candy.
And is there, do you think, a generational trend that is shifting? I had this conversation with Gershon, my husband, the other night. We had gone out for a quick dinner. And four, must have been early 20-year-olds, walked in and sat down at a table just next to us. And within 5 minutes, they had ordered and everything else. And I looked over and none of them had ordered alcohol. They were all drinking hot chocolates or milkshakes. But after the drinks arrived, the hubblies arrived. And I said to Gershom, are we seeing a generational shift that in previous generations, when you were in your early 20s, you know, your varsity undergrad ages, we were going out and, you know, having a great time, but it was cigarettes and alcohol. It seems like the younger generation now know how bad those are and are saying, oh, no, 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 I'll avoid those because they're so bad for me. And then they're substituting these fun behaviors.
They're substituting one evil for another, and it's being marketed as it's not as bad, but it's probably worse.
Sure. Okay, well, there you have it. It's probably worse.
It sounds like to me that there's a big problem in terms of that it's been made to seem safe. And parents think it. A psychologist has even managed to think about it. Are there bigger campaigns being thought of or developed to target on a bigger level? Because policy level requires an understanding that it's not safe, an understanding that it impacts the brain and it becomes addictive. But I don't know if that understanding's out there. Are there bigger campaigns being thought of or developed to kind of break that thought that it's safe, that it's an alternative?
At the moment, it's very much in silos, because I do think there needs to be sort of collaboration. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of this, it feels to me like it was, you know, all the colors and the lights and the flavors. And then somebody went, oh, wait, we maybe need to look at this closely. And so now we've got, you know, some research going, because again, you can't change policy without, you know, the numbers and the research. But I mean, I don't think that it's gained as much traction. Like, I mean, as a psychiatric society, this year we decided that that's something that we need to pay attention to, but not in a lobbying, but just to create awareness in the hope that that can sort of begin conversations like these in terms of policy, you know, where we go to from here. But it does need to be a more collaborative effort where it's not just it's social development, health, education, all coming together, And recently, I think the Department of Health is also, they have a substance abuse campaign. They've started to create awareness around particularly vaping in teens. But again, it's siloed, you know, and so there's definitely a need for it. But I don't know in terms of the drive, because the other thing is that economics does rule the world, and this is big business. And if you say the tobacco companies are buying the vaping companies, that becomes problematic.
I'd like to bring up an interesting point. You mentioned how that many of us teenagers would substitute like alcohol and stuff like other stuff because it's bad. My question to you is, can you compare the level of severity of vaping to if a person was smoking, I don't know, like say DMT, cannabis, or even in fact marijuana? Like, can you compare those two different concepts?
So the thing about the all of the substances is that they do the same, they have the same impact on the developing brain. So maybe it's not nicotine contained in like marijuana, but it's a substance which still primes the brain for addiction, changes, you know, in terms of the learning and impulse control and all of those things. So it's the damage that the substance does to the developing brain over and above the individual regions of the brain. So in my mind, with the developing brain, there isn't that nicotine is less harmful than cannabis versus, you know, some of the others. If anything, it might be more subtle because you don't see the same kind of intoxication effects like you get with alcohol or you'll get with dacha or cocaine, because you'll see it. But the effect on that development is the same in terms of how it affects it and impacts it.
Last year, I went to like the Kruger camp as a holiday thing. And I'll be honest with you, I've never smoked in my entire life. I've never smoked e-cigarettes, any form of dacha or anything. But I saw this one kid in our group. I think it was around the second day or third day. He brought a vape into the camp when he was told not to. And I was in absolute shock and like disbelief that he would do that. From what I understand is that if the vapes can affect your lungs, like how quickly can a person get exhausted when they would exercise, like run, jump, or even walk? Like how quickly can they get tired from when they vape, when they travel long distances?
So, I mean, I think that it's over time. And I think that's also the difficulty because we won't necessarily see it immediately, but it starts to chip away. Like with smoking, people then eventually develop, you know, emphysema because it's over a long period of time. So initially, they would continue because it would seem as though it has no effect. But over a period of time, things start to get more and more and more damaged.
Professor Van Selsmet was saying, if you're wondering in your school, he said to heads, if you're wondering in your school who your vapors are,
yeah,
check for the kids who are frequently missing class because of asthma, respiratory infections, that sort of thing. It's going to impact them.
The use of marijuana and the blending of marijuana with the vaping kind of culture. As schools and heads, we went through this, you know, social upheaval, and when marijuana seemed to be legalized, because you're allowed to grow it at home and use it for personal use, so suddenly marijuana was legal. And I remember our first cases with vapes were the crossover where there was infused marijuana in vapes and things like that. And I wonder if, and it's my question, are you seeing kids that are using vapes to make marijuana more effective? Is marijuana being sold in vapes? Are we co-joining problems here and making it more accessible? And I'm quite sure that as a vape, marijuana would be a lot more easier. It would be a lot easier for it to cross into the bloodstream and in the brain barrier and things like that.
Yes, and that's also the problem. With it being unregulated, you can put anything in there and, you know, call it a vape. The problem with marijuana as a substance is that it is even more problematic because people who are predisposed, and you wouldn't know if you've got a genetic vulnerability to, say, schizophrenia or, you know, a psychotic illness, which is a severe mental illness. You wouldn't know you have a vulnerability. But marijuana actually can accelerate the onset of that psychotic episode. And so that is more problematic because that's a severe mental health problem. Because marijuana is giving you a dopamine boost of note. You know, and oftentimes I'll say to kids where they have a family history, then do whatever, but please don't take marijuana because that's the substance that will then precipitate that onset of a severe mental illness, more so than any other substance. So even, again, you know, the idea that marijuana is the lesser of the evil, from a mental health point of view, marijuana is more problematic than the others from a mental health point of view. Maybe not so much with, you know, addiction in terms of, you know, your cocaine and amphetamines or your more hardcore substances. But marijuana is more problematic in that sense in terms of the mental health impact.
Policy is just creating the guardrails. Essentially, it's up to us as responsible adults to start talking about it and creating a culture where it's not okay to vape or for kids to vape. Yes. And I've seen a lot when vapes came out, you could use them in public space, you know, you could use them in public spaces, you could use them in restaurants, and now people are treating them. Most people are drawing the line and treating it like tobacco products, which is hopeful that policy and the health department will follow suit, as you say, if they're not overly influenced by the economics of the whole thing.
And, you know, the other thing is that it also, with the physical health element as well, you know, in terms of your lung issues, they're more sedentary as well. But even just from a nutritional point of view, because there's also studies that show that kids, particularly teenagers who vape, they definitely eat less fruit, vegetables, and so they have more nutrition problems. And again, nutrition, food is medicine. So their nutrition is then poor. And it's also, there's a misperception that promotes weight loss. So your adolescent females are then taken up because of this idea. But again, poor nutrition, development becomes problematic as well. So it really does start a cycle that we really do need to be intentionally breaking.
Are you seeing a greater prevalence of girls or boys?
It's adolescence as a whole. There isn't that differentiating in terms of, because I think that girls and boys do it for different reasons. Girls do have more levels of anxiety, you know, versus boys, especially when adolescence arrives. But there seems to be an equal distribution, and it may be for differing reasons, but adolescence or the adolescent currently is where the increase is seen. And it's also changed the way that we've now had to add different questions, because it's not just about whether you smoke cigarettes or you take, now we've got to ask specifically about vaping because they didn't see it as that smoking. No, I don't smoke. Oh, and then you realize later, now you've got to say, when you don't, do you vape? Yes. You know, yes, you do. And so it has changed the landscape quite significantly.
What advice would you have for us as the educators, the people who are involved with the teens every single day? What should we be looking out for? And what steps should we be taking so that we can manage not just the code of conduct point of view, but the pastoral point of view as well?
We need to start having the conversations. And, you know, there is also a myth, you know, parents say, oh, if I talk about it, it's going to make my kid want to do it if I talk about it. Therefore, let's not talk about it. So, like, then we won't have to deal with it. But I think talking, because I really think that knowledge is power. And so it's about creating that awareness. And then also just looking deeper than the vape in the hand to the deeper issues that may be at play in terms of this may be a kid who is struggling. And it is often hard, not so much for educators, but it's hard for parents to often accept that my child is struggling, because it looks so different, because your child can be struggling and they'll still go out with friends. And I often hear that, yeah, but they okay and they go out with friends so they can't be depressed. One and one doesn't equal two, because kids socializing, how they present to the outside world is important, because where they are developmentally. So it's about having these hard conversations and creating the awareness, particularly with parents and, you know, in the education space.
And what advice do you have for the parents who have the 14-year-olds who are pressuring them and saying, but all my friends have a vape, and if I go to parties, there's vape, so I really need to have my own vape? What do you say to them?
So, you know, I say that our job as parents is to put the boundary. Your 14-year-old's job is to push the boundary and to keep pushing the boundary. And even sometimes they burn the boundary, but your job is to hold the boundary. And consistency is key. And yes, they may not like it, because nobody likes a boundary, but boundaries keep our kids safe. But a lot of the time, or a lot of the work that we do with parents, is getting parents to tolerate the discomfort of having to hold that boundary, because you're going to get you the worst mom, I hate you, I this and that. It's not personal. It's an attack on that boundary. And so boundaries and consistency, connection are key for adolescents.
I love that. That's exactly what we need to hear. And finally, the teenagers in the room, and I know that there are going to be teenagers watching this, what would you like to say to them?
Don't do it. You need to think about, you know, I often say to the kids that I see, you know, what would your 40-year-old self say about this? Or how are you going to justify the choices you're making now to your 40-year-old self?
I met somebody last weekend, a 52-year-old who was vaping, which I find very bizarre already, very unattractive. So we had a conversation around that. I was like, why do you vape? And he says, no, he took it away from his kid. And he thought, what is this all about? And he had a drag of it, and now he's addicted to it. So yeah, I wonder how many times that happens.
Because it's not an exit, it's a gateway.
There we go. Because it's a gateway.
Because it's a gateway.
What it would be, like, for me as a teenager, like, the best way for me to, like, avoid, like, these kinds of things? Because it's going to be a lot more difficult for me in today's age, at least.
Are you asking how you can avoid it?
Yeah.
Well, you can lock yourself in your bedroom.
You have to make a decision before. So if you know that where you are going to go, there are going to be people vaping, and you think that if you go, you will be able to not, you should rather stay at home. So who you keep company with is very important.
Sure.
And so it's an intentional decision that you have to make.
Could someone argue that vaping is on the idea of consumerism as opposed to peer pressure, or can it be both?
I think this is not either or. I think it's both.
Dr. Porter, thank you very much. This has been really insightful. You've given us some things to digest and to think about, and I think you've clarified a few issues for us as well. I think you've made it quite clear. We shouldn't even be considering this as the conversation of, oh, well, it gets us off cigarettes, and these just seem like loopholes.
So, you know, that's an interesting one, because that's another kind of promotion, like, it's going to help me stop smoking. Actually, less than 19% of people actually stop smoking that way. But also, it's not an FDA-approved method for cessation of smoking.
Right.
I mean, it isn't. There are FDA-approved methods to help you stop smoking. The nicotine, all of those are FDA-approved. Vaping, unfortunately, is not FDA-approved for cessation of smoking. Therefore, it has no evidence base.
And there we go. Case in point, why we needed you to explain these things. Thank you very much for being here. And again, we really appreciate your time, just taking the time to come from your practice, share with us. We really are grateful. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.